express yourself.
I'm expressing with my full capabilities, and now I'm living in correctional facilities. Cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very...
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network, your number one sports podcast network in Southern California, the only place with a show for every team in the area and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? So Kent and I are back over the phone from me in Manhattan Beach, him in Orange County to talk some Ducks hockey. It's been a while. Kent, how you doing?
I'm good. It's good to be back. Sorry for my hiatus there and our one attempted episode at the coffee shop. We ran into a scheduling conflict with the coffee shop there, but you guys did a great job there. It's good to be back with you this week.
Absolutely, and we've had a lot going on since our last episode that we recorded together. The trade deadline's come and gone. The Ducks have played some more consistent hockey, I think, including games against Toronto, Minnesota, and tonight's game against the Senators. And then the Bob Murray had a hockey hot stove, that they called it, hosted by Brian Hayward, the color commentary, and then Murray took some questions from fans. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And then for the three stars, it's going to be favorite types of hockey plays. So not an individual play or highlight that you can remember from a game, but just the type of play that you like. So I think that's where we're going to go. Sound good?
Sounds great. Love it.
Absolutely. So let's get to this trade deadline talk again. Kyle Schohara from the Ducks, he gave us his impressions. But Kent, overall, what were your impressions from the trade deadline?
I mean, I thought there were some probably tough moves from like an emotional fan standpoint. Obviously, with this season that Derek Grant was having, and then just to see Kasha moved as well. I know that that was a stinger for some people out there. And yeah, I mean, it's always a difficult thing. And I think as the season unfolds, I think it's usually the GM and scouting staff and everyone will kind of get together and kind of decide. I mean, ultimately it's in the GM's hands, but everyone kind of has a say and their two cents about what the big picture is and what kind of the end goals for finishing out this year. When you're kind of mixing in a bit of some reality about where the team's likely going to finish and what you want to do to kind of get yourself to the finish line this year, but more importantly, in the Ducks' case, of what you're going to do to kind of set yourself up from a salary cap structure, kind of moving forward for the next 2-3 years, and then take a look at what you've got as far as draft picks for the next 2-3 seasons, and see if you can kind of add to that when the writing's kind of on the wall that the playoffs aren't looking too likely this year. But I mean, I always love to see that when as a fan of the organization who just wants nothing but the best for an organization that treated me phenomenally well and has always been great and continues to do great things. So we want to see nothing but the best for them. So I mean, I just love seeing guys getting moved who maybe going to great teams and getting themselves a nice opportunity to kind of play into the playoffs when the kind of scouting and the notoriety and everything as the number of teams dwindle, the exposure kind of gets saturated. So if you can kind of crack a conference final or even a conference semifinal, where scouts are still working into those late spring months and they've got nowhere else to go, so everyone's going to the games, everyone's watching the same players. So if you can get in some team's line of sight, it's good for the player because it can kind of opens some doors as far as free agency and future contracts and getting seen by teams that might not necessarily get as good a look at them otherwise. And then I think for the Ducks, being able to add some youth and some speed and some kind of young talent. And yeah, most importantly for me is the draft picks. I think those are so huge these days. And I think all the deals made sense. Some were tough for sure, but I like what they got back on for what they gave up.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think a lot of people who are frustrated about the Kasha trade really overlooked the point that it's kind of the whole fancy stats thing. He had great underlying numbers and he was very spectacular at times on the ice because he clearly had skill, but I mean, he was injured a lot. He wasn't putting up the numbers that the Ducks needed him to put up. Maybe a change of scenery would have helped. And if it took taking on David Backes's contract and trading away Andre Kasha to get a first round pick, I mean, so be it. That's what you need to, compile those picks. The Ducks got a few, they're going to finish with two first rounders. I think they're going to have a couple fourths. So they did accumulate some trades or some draft picks. Derek Grant, that trade was, tough. I can totally understand why they did it, but, apparently, if the whole hockey hot stove thing we're going to talk about later is to be believed, he might be back, as a free agent. So we'll see there. And then Sonny Milano, he's been kind of quiet recently, but I like that, kind of a scratch ticket trade, I call it, where it's a high ceiling guy who maybe with the new surroundings can play well. And I don't know, Nick Ritchie never really moved the needle for me. I think I know they didn't trade him for Milano, but he just never really seemed to convert when he had a lot of chances in front of the net. I know that's tough. And strangely enough, both he and Kasha end up on the team I grew up rooting for in Boston. So it's interesting. The funny thing to me recently is that Backes got a point before Kasha did. He got a game before Kasha, I think, got his first assist, first point, which is an assist for the Bruins. Backes got an assist on that tip that Carter Rowney scored a couple nights ago. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's kind of a neat little kind of throw-in kind of subplot of all the trades going on. It was kind of what had been going on with Backes in Boston. I think we might have mentioned it last time we were talking, but yeah, I actually played with David in St. Louis, and great guy, a great player, obviously. With all the trends kind of being towards youth and speed, it's kind of, made some guys kind of a little, less valued as they were in the past. But I think he's always a great player and a great teammate. And, I mean, you talk about an athlete in just a tough spot. I mean, I think whether you're, I don't want this to come off weird or anything, but I think one of the hardest thing I think for him in the Boston situation, where like you're just not like as an athlete, you're still a human being. I mean, whether you're a kid on the playground or an athlete at the highest level, there's still like strip away all the money and the implications and the contracts and all that stuff. It's still the main thing fueling these guys is the competitiveness and the will and the desire to be as good as they can possibly be and compete against the best, and that's what kind of drives. So to have a scenario where he's not like that. I mean, I guess by today's standards, he's kind of on the older side, but he's not ancient or anything, and to be in a position where to go from the role he was filling in with the Blues is, I'm not sure if he was captain. He might have been captain.
He was
just one of the leaders of that team for sure for a lot of years. That was a great team. Great teams they had there. And while I was there, he was definitely one of the leaders and in the community as well. Like just a great guy. And So, yeah, I think that's going to be tough when you go from that and then sign the big ticket to go to Boston and other great organizations and to have things kind of work out how they are, where you just feel like unwanted and just kind of sitting on the sidelines and not even being able to go play in the minors, which, like, at least you can go compete and get some reps in and practice, or to just be kind of in purgatory like that had to be a really tough situation. So yeah, I guess that was kind of the idea, that the Ducks take on some of that salary. But I love plugging them into the lineup and seeing them out there. And I saw them at Ducks and Tucks, a great event put on by the Ducks and a bunch of local chefs, kind of fundraiser at Honda Center. And I mean, you could see the excitement in him. He was just hoping to get an opportunity to get back out on the ice. And I don't think he was even, he wasn't playing in the minors in Boston, and I'm not sure if he was even skating there. So to go from that and then get back on the ice for what had to be probably two or three skates with the Ducks and then go right into a game, and to get an assist and to chip in, and then he had another couple of assists tonight. I mean, that's awesome to see, and I'm sure that means a lot to him personally, and to at least showcase that, you know, what you kind of believe, you always believe you can still play, and I'm sure he feels that way too, and to kind of have that validated going out and getting 3 points in five games and showing you can still compete at this level and you still got contributions left. I'm sure that's got to feel good for him, and it was cool to see.
Yeah, I was curious about that too. I'm guessing he chose just not to report to the AHL when the Bruins waived him, or I don't know, or is there a rule that said that he couldn't go down there just because of what his contract was?
No, I think it was from what I kind of understood, I did some research into it and just kind of tried to read some articles, but it seemed like I think he would have probably as opposed to just sitting doing nothing, to at least go to the minors and stay in shape, because it seemed like they'd kind of reached that point where a trade was the only kind of way forward for both parties. And kind of my understanding was that it was kind of just the way things worked out, and they basically didn't had him as kind of an asset and didn't want him to go somewhere and get hurt and then not be able to move him, kind of thing. So I think it was just a complicated situation, and one that you don't really see too often, because I mean, I think guys that are kind of getting up in their career, that's not that uncommon now, to get kind of sent to the minors and kind of have to go and try to work your way back and that kind of thing, and fill in maybe a bit of a leadership role and kind of pay it forward a little bit to some of the young guys coming up, and just the lay of the land these days, it's not that uncommon. So I don't think it was a scenario where he just refused to report. I think it was something else.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the injury thing. But either way, it's good to see him get on the board again tonight and kind of get a little bit of a hot streak going. Let's take that into the Toronto game from a few days back. The Ducks get the 2-1 win. Backes, get like we were talking about, gets his first point before Andrei Kasha gets his first point in Boston. The Ducks really, I felt, outplayed Toronto, which to me is mind-boggling how Toronto's played recently, having lost all three games to the all California teams who have been struggling, to say the least. And I mean, if Florida gets their act together, it's going to be a problem for Toronto. I didn't check the scores. I think Toronto won tonight. I think they beat the Lightning. Let's see. Yeah, they beat the Lightning 2-1, so I think they're back ahead of the Panthers by 3 points or so. But really coming to California and being outcompeted by all three California teams is not a good sign for them. Meanwhile, the Ducks, I'm curious, as a former player, and when you hear the kind of cliche, the playing spoiler, does that really enter your mind when your team is not in it and you're in the playoff race? Do you really go into a game thinking, like, unless it's a rival? I'd understand if it were the Kings or the Sharks or the Ducks. Having played for the Sharks and Ducks, I can understand if you're trying to kind of spoil your rival's opportunity to make the playoffs. But, like, let's say the Toronto's coming into Anaheim. I mean, it's an Eastern Conference opponent. They only play each other twice a year. Are the guys in the locker room, you think, really going into the game like, let's ruin these guys' chance of making the playoffs? Let's make it harder for them. Let's try to knock them out. Or is it just a more of a, hey, this team's good, let's have a good performance, let's play with some pride?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter, where it's just like, yeah, we know this is a good team and a team that always gets a lot of fanfare and media coverage in the hockey world, and especially up in Canada, and an original six team that, yeah, like I say, it's one of the, if not, I mean, them or Montreal, as far as Canada is concerned, is the, you know, would be the two most storied franchises. And to play, I guess I'm from Ontario, but it was always cool playing against the Leafs. And I'm from Ottawa, so I always love beating the Leafs a little bit extra. That was for kind of personal reasons. But as far as, I don't know, playing spoiler with a kind of out-of-conference opponent, it doesn't – I think it's more so, yeah, just as a competitor, and, you know, they're a good team with a lot of skill, and it's a good challenge. And, guys are kind of playing to make impressions with a new team or for next year, or, a team that's not necessarily – I guess you can't really say they haven't performed expectations, because I think this was kind of a non-expectation type year for the Ducks. But anytime you're not really in contention, I think everyone kind of wonders about their job. And everyone, I mean, people love playing in Anaheim and people want to be here. And so I think just personally and as a competitor, I think that's what's kind of fueling it more than ruining it for someone else. Although, like, if the game got started and there's any kind of chippiness, that's always can creep in as an added incentive to, screw these guys. Like, let's rain on their parade here. And I think always, like, the more the hype, the kind of more you want to beat a team like that too.
Absolutely. And so the Ducks get the win over in that against Toronto, and in a pretty good performance overall. Then they come back, they play the Minnesota Wild, really back and forth game with the Wild win in overtime. I'm curious, did you get a chance to see that goalie interference play on Ryan Miller? Do you think it deserved to be upheld as a goal, or do you think it was kind of a bad call?
It was borderline. Like, I wouldn't have been surprised. I feel like I've seen less, seen goals called back for less, but I don't think it really impacted the play that much. It was just kind of a funny play, the way the, I think, it, was that the play? It was like, I think it was a shot block and then went right back on the guy's tape, and then, I don't know. I probably have to watch it a couple times. That was my first reaction, was that, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they called this back, but they probably won't. And I don't know. I don't think it really impacted the play. I think it was more kind of incidental, but I don't know. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it could have been called a goalie interference. I mean, it was Zuccarello who kind of made the pass over, or the shot. It got blocked and went back to him. And I forgot who it was who interfered with, or technically collided with Miller. But I guess his left, his right skate was a little bit out of the crease, out of the blue paint. So you can say right there that it was a little bit of a, I guess he was outside of the area where he would be protected. And it was, but on the other hand, I forget who it was that collided with him or kind of interfered.
Galchenyuk?
Yeah, it was Galchenyuk. Galchenyuk didn't have to go. I mean, he didn't have to be that close. Like he wasn't forced in. He didn't have his progress impeded. He wasn't pushed into Miller. So it kind of felt like, I mean, it was a little more intentional than it looked. But then, like you said, it was almost inconsequential. Miller was just so out of position, having that pass kind of blocked and not knowing, I mean, not being able to predict that was going to happen, that it didn't feel like he was going to be able to get back there anyway. But I don't know. I think it could have been called goalie interference.
Yeah, I'd be curious to ask Miller about that because, I mean, yeah, I guess he was out of position, but that would be your push leg that the guy took out. Like, that would be the leg you'd be pushing off to get back to the other side. So if someone takes off that leg, maybe that's why he was so out of position. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to ask him and get his take on it. Maybe watch it a couple more times myself.
Yeah. And then other things I noticed from that game, I mean, just kind of the whole season, we talk about trends and stuff like that. This season, I've really noticed how Jakob Silfverberg has really mastered that low. I mean, you always see the people kind of glorifying high shots, like up in the corners, barred down. But Silfverberg has really mastered that low shot, sometimes through a defender, kind of either between the legs or up over the pad and under the arm of opposing goalies. It's crazy how often he scores on that shot. Have you noticed that?
Now that you mention it, I have, and that's a really hard, I mean, that's a pinpoint shot, but that's, you do see a lot of his goals, and he does have that kind of knack of just kind of zipping it right through that little window of, either to the defenseman's legs or just kind of over the shin pad or between the stick and the shin, just kind of, he really has a good ability to kind of drag the puck a little bit till he can find some daylight to get it through. And then when you're shooting through a screen and the kind of the goalie's first impulse is to go down. And when you kind of go down and get your, go to manipulate your gloves, and the instinct is to kind of grab. And it's funny that you just with that little extension, I'm sure that comes from doing it in practice thousands and thousands of times, I'm sure. But that was, the knowledge, my knowledge inside the mind of a goal scorer isn't that great. But I got to think, you hear guys talk, and a lot of guys talk about shooting low, and I think it's one of those things where shooting high is always kind of, I don't know why, it's weird, but it does kind of look cool, like especially if you can go bar and in or bar down, and those always look the best. But shooting low is just kind of functional, like you either get like five hole or like the trickle through goals, or those armpit goals, you seem to be seeing more and more of those. But yeah, he's definitely perfected it. And I wonder if that's that's where he's purposely kind of shooting it. It's kind of the gap of the down the side of the body to hopefully sneak through there, which is crazy the accuracy these guys have. But yeah, I have noticed that. Yeah, that's a good pickup by you.
Thanks. I mean, they do preach that to you when you're even as like minor hockey, when you're really young, is to shoot low, hit the pads, generate rebound. If the goalie's going to catch it with his glove or direct it, if he has the ability to direct it away with his blocker, he's got a lot more ability to change the angle and either tie up the puck or deflect it behind the net. Whereas a pad shot or a shot kind of low into the arms, it's harder for them to collect it. So that makes sense too, if he's trying to generate some more offense that way. And I mean, he knows he can score that way, and at worst case scenario, he's going to get a rebound. So,
yeah.
Yeah, smart. Just a smart player. Shows just kind of what a heady player Silverberg is, and he's been fun to watch for sure over the past two seasons, even if the Ducks have been struggling. And another thing that's been good to see, especially in the Minnesota game, is new guys scoring. Christian Jews gets his first goal with the Ducks from the point, and then Danton Heinen scores again. So even though they're not really able to help in a playoff push, it's a good sign that they're scoring. I mean, they're doing what they're supposed to. So hopefully we'll see more of them next season now that there's really less than a month to go.
Yeah, I don't know that much about the Juice defenseman and his time in Washington. I feel like, talking about Silverberg, that pass on the Juice goal was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, kind of no look, threading it through the defenseman's legs, so there wasn't much daylight there, right on the tape. And for the kind of the offside one timer, that was a good shot by Juice. So I think I'll be curious to see kind of how that works out over the next couple of years, because I think I just from watching him, he seems like a good player. So I think that'll be good to watch him. I think speaking of young defensemen, I think we've seen some good stuff from Larson. I think as he continues to grow and develop, and probably a couple more summers and a couple more years of physical development, I think sometimes like just size wise there's some issues as far as like physical battles and that kind of thing, but I think he's still a pretty heady defenseman, and you like to see just his the signs of him carrying the puck up the ice and jumping up and making some good stuff happen offensively. And I think he's got the right demeanor. So like I say, as he fills out, I think we'll start to see his effectiveness as a defenseman is only going to increase.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, he is still relatively young and small and in terms of body mass. Going back to Juice, I think the thing I like about him subtly, if he can maintain his success and stay up in the NHL over the next couple of years, is I'm not sure how long his contract is with the Ducks, but his playoff experience. I mean, he won a cup with the Capitals and played, I think, in every game in that run. So that's pretty invaluable for a team that's getting younger in Anaheim.
Yeah.
Having a young guy who can kind of speak from experience in that type of situation when they do get there.
Yeah, great point.
Before we talk about the Ducks win over the Senators, let's talk about home security. There's two ways you can go about protecting your home. You can wait weeks for a technician to do a messy install that costs a fortune, or you can get SimpliSafe, the two-time winner of the CNET Editor's Choice Award. SimpliSafe blankets your whole home in safety. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you to anyone who's approaching. Entry motion and glass break sensors guard the inside. You can set up the system all by yourself, and it only takes 30 minutes. You'll have an army of highly trained security experts ready to dispatch police in a moment's notice 24/7, and it only costs 50 cents a day with no contracts. Go to simplisafe.com/team today and you'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go now and be sure to go to simplisafe.com/team. That's simplisafe.com/team. Then off to today's game, a pretty impressive victory with not in terms necessarily of how the Ducks played. They won 5-2, but really felt like they were dominated at times by the Senators. They got outshot 42-15, so that's pretty one-sided. And in those 15 shots, Nicholas Deslauriers scores three goals in a span of 9 minutes in the first period to be the I think that is the fastest hat trick in terms of time that it was completed in Ducks history, which is a pretty impressive. And Deslauriers really, I think, making a case for the new fan favorite after Derek Grant's been shipped out of town.
Yeah, what a story. I mean, coming out of camp, just an unheralded signing and, just a great pickup, and it's just continued to, he's started the season off well, kind of in and out of the lineup, but was effective and noticeable when he was in. And then just kind of did it the hard way. And fighting tough guys every night, not an easy way to do it, but he's done it and done it well, and more than held his own and created a lot of energy for the rest of the guys and for the fans and for the atmosphere at Honda Center. And I think just plays hard every night, finishes checks every shift, does all the dirty work, and to see it culminate in a nice extension for him and to really solidify his spot as part of the team and their plans for the next couple of years. And just a great guy to have around. And to have that happen tonight I'm really happy for him. He's earned every bit of what he's gotten here. And I think as a guy who's been around it myself, and you always like to see the guys who work hard and pay their dues and do the dirty work get rewarded nice extension and a natural hat trick. How about that? That's crazy. But yeah, good for him.
To me, he's kind of a throwback. I mean, not a throwback that far, but kind of a newer version of Sean Thornton. I mean, Thornton had the ability to score. He was definitely not afraid to punch people in the face. Really was part of was part of the Ducks Stanley Cup back in 2007, and the Bruins in 2011 made up really a strong fourth line when he was in the lineup. And I think Delorier is very similar. Just in terms of his game, he can, if you set him up in the right spot, he can score. He's not completely devoid of skills that can help the team when he's not fighting. And tonight really showed what he's capable of. So that was kind of that came to mind when I was watching Delorier today.
Yeah, I think it's a good comparison. I never knew he was. I think I might have played against him, or I think he was just kind of coming up when I was my last couple of years I was winding it down. But he I never knew he was this tough. Like, he has fought some tough guys this year and done more than well. Like, I can't say he's come up on the wrong end of too many fights, which is impressive during the number of times he's squared off with guys this year. And he's got a great shot. And I think, one of the best things, too, is, I mean, he can skate. He's fast. He gets around well and can get in and finish hits. And you kind of have to do that to be able to stay in the lineup nowadays, and he's just, when you have a multifaceted game like that and you can bring a lot of different things to the table, I think that's it's been impressive, and glad he's going to be here for another couple of years at least.
Yeah, I'm looking up the tail of the tape right now. I know obviously it's never going to happen because Thornton's retired, but I mean they're comparable. I mean, Thornton's 6'6", just a little over 6 feet, 217. Delorier, same thing, weighs 219 pounds. So, I mean, their similarities are multiple. So I can see, and he was loved in Boston when Thornton played there. So I can see that why Delorier has become so popular in such a short amount of time in Anaheim. Anything else you want to add about that Senators game tonight before we talk a little Bob Murray?
I think it was just interesting. The Ducks kind of, I feel like they've been on the wrong end of a lot of games like this. Like, they kind of flipped the script tonight. Like, a lot of times this year, I feel like they outshot teams and carried the play and would wind up in the wrong side of a 5-2 or even 6-2, 6-1 type of game. So I think my poor hometown Senators are having a tough season, but some good reasons for optimism there too, with some good young players. I think nice to see it even out once in a while, getting outshot. But I think also once you get up, score that many goals in the first period, you know, there's a tendency for the rest of the game that you're not really necessarily worried about giving up a lot of shots. It's more just kind of keeping it simple, and giving up shots are okay, but just try and limit the grade A's, and kind of it seemed like they just kind of not coast to the finish line, but just knew the lay of the land and knew they had what they needed to get a win tonight. And just good to see them come out on a score like that, as opposed to how the rest of the year has gone.
Absolutely. So let's get into a little Bob Murray discussion. He just held his hockey hot stove where he basically hosted.
Can't wait for this.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of strange. I mean, I hopefully it's not disappointing, because I'll reference the outlet that I got it from. And when I first read it, basically what it was, it appears to have been basically a round table or a open discussion hosted by Brian Hayward, where he was asking Bob Murray some questions, and then Murray took questions from the fans, and it was basically done for the season ticket holders, the Orange Alliance, from what I can tell. But the outlet who did it is the Ducks and Pucks outlet from the Puck Network, and it's the way they did it. I don't know if maybe they didn't, if the Ducks didn't allow people to post direct quotes from the event, or if they just paraphrased only for a certain reason. But a lot of this comes paraphrased, so I don't know what the tone was and how it was said. Just some interesting points from Murray. The one that stood out the most to me was his talking about basically one-timers, and he said, this is the quote from Ducks and Pucks. It's not from Murray directly, but I guess it's paraphrasing what Murray said. He said, Murray wouldn't mention any player names in free agency, but this is referencing who he might be looking for in free agency, but he has several that he's currently looking at. He really wants someone that has a good one-timer from the blue line, he said. We'll be looking for shooters in the draft. Some of our guys just can't shoot one-timers. It boggles my mind. Another fan stated she was tired of extra passes, and Murray agreed. He is a shoot-first kind of guy, he added. Is that, I mean, was he that forward with you guys? Boggling, I mean, it just seems like it's something we have noticed over the season, that they haven't been able to kind of shoot as many one-timers in situations, especially the power play, that you think it would make sense. And Hayward, in his color commentary, has mentioned it a few times, but I mean, as a player, if your general manager is that forward about something, does that kind of bother you? How did you react to that?
I don't know. I think that would never get communicated from the mouth of the GM directly to the player. That would probably go through a couple filters, and probably more look like an assistant coach grabbing a couple of the defensemen after practices wind down and feed them about 100 one-timers, and then just kind of work on that daily, basically. Mm-hmm. and then maybe incorporate it into practice, and just a higher volume of one-time shots. But I guess that is it's all relative. You know, everyone can one time a puck, but I mean, one time a puck at the NHL level, when you get the velocity of an NHL pass and like the ability to get good wood on it if it's not sitting flat, like there's a lot of nuances to it. And I mean, there's guys that, it's true, there's guys that can just flat out shoot the puck, and whether they have other kind of not always, like, obviously there's guys like Weber and Char with 120 mile an hour slap shot, but that's not necessarily what he's talking about. But I think just the ability to, like, I don't know, I think of a guy like you know, Brent Burns, who I always kind of marvel at that ability to get shots off and get shots through to the net, because I know it's from experience how hard that is. And it just, these guys, that's a guy who makes it look easy. And but yeah, being able to get it, get good wood off a shot, whether you're off your back foot, front foot, whether the puck's rolling, whether it's you know, basically for me when I play, I mean, I can one time it, but it basically had to be kind of perfect, right in the wheelhouse, right, like right in the right spot. That was not one of my strong suits. But then you had a guy like Pronger, if it was anywhere within his area code, he could get wood on it and get it to the net with velocity, you know. So I think it is a skill, it's a learned skill, it's a practice skill, and some guys are just kind of have a knack for it. So I think that's probably, I'm not surprised to hear that. I think you would think, given the fact that it's the NHL, everyone would be an elite level one-timer, but it is that kind of nuance of a skill, and the guys are elite at it. It's a pretty special kind of skill, and I mean, highly valued, obviously, for a power play scenario. So I think that's why you could probably have your eye on a pinpoint on a. And pinpoint a handful of guys who you're looking at, because it really is, it's not a widespread skill as you would think.
Yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense that, I mean, if it were, there would be a lot more guys making those shots from the top of the circle, like Pasternak and Ovechkin, and it is really a few, it's a trademark play that you only see a few guys do, so I get that. Grant Murray also apparently mentioned he'd be interested in bringing Grant back in free agency. So I wonder if there's a kind of back channel communication going on there.
When I saw that deal, that's what immediately came to my mind, was that I would not be surprised at all. I mean, they've done it before, and I think that's the great thing about trading these guys as rentals. I mean, here's a guy who had success in Anaheim. You know, the same coach is going to be there next year. Everything's going to be the same, and coming back to Anaheim, and it's not a tough sell. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen. And I know he did the same thing with Dos Otto last year. And, you know, I think there's familiarity there on both sides. The one kind of game changer would probably be, if Grant's play kind of continues to where it is, and I think he's doing well and carrying right on doing what he was doing and with the Flyers too, who have been on this insane streak. So if he keeps it up and get, you know, plays into May and June, you know, the contract that he's fetching come July might be out of the price range, but I don't know. I hope it works out. It would be great to have a guy like that back.
Absolutely. I wonder if any of our listeners happen to be in the real estate market in Orange County, if I don't even know if he was renting or owning and wherever he was living, and if he sold his place or if he's kept it, but or put it on the market. But that might be a clue. That's certainly what everybody's looking at with the Tom Brady watch and football now. Everybody's like, he's got a property in Las Vegas, so he's going to play there. So that'd be an interesting thing to see. The other thing that I thought I saw it somewhere in reference to this hot stove. When I first read the comments, it was on Twitter at like 8 a.m. I was kind of rubbing my eyes, and somebody was kind of paraphrasing the same way from, and I think he said, I think Murray admitted, like, he's not necessarily trying to to win games, which doesn't seem like something that would come out of his mouth, and I haven't been able to find it since I saw it the other morning, so I don't want to say that take that with a grain of salt. I don't think that's necessarily, I don't know if he necessarily did say that, but another kind of strange thing that struck me when I read it originally.
Yeah, I mean, I think the paraphrase could probably get a little creative with that, but I mean, I from my personal take on is I would kind of, if that is something along that lines of what he said, I would probably agree that winning isn't really the top priority right now. It'd be more about like young guys continuing to develop and just kind of the way they're playing, just habits, things being instilled, just kind of continuing to compete the way they have this year, and just kind of aligning things. Yeah, the big picture is way more important than wins, especially right now when you're out of it. And it's almost, you know, no one wants to say it, but it's almost better if you, from a morale standpoint, wins are better. From a big picture standpoint, losses are better because you get the better chance at a higher draft pick and a better player for the next, you know, 5-10 years. So, that's kind of how I feel about it. And I know the guys, you want to see the guys working hard out there, have success and get wins and everything like that. But, it's kind of like, either way, it's fine at this point.
Yeah. Agreed. So let's get to the three stars to wrap things up. So today we're going to go over our three favorite types of plays in hockey that you like to see on TV or in person or I guess when you were playing, plays that really, if you were part of it, you really got got you going. So I guess I'll quickly go through mine. Number one is the solid open ice body check. That's always, that's going away more and more in this game where someone's going to get clipped in the head or something like that. So it's always fun to see the real solid body contact, open ice, chest, shoulder to chest. And if there's a little bit of incidental head contact because the player's head is down, I'm okay with that. But I just like the solid checks like that. Dustin Byfuglien would always have a lot of those. The other night, I was talking with Kyle on our last episode about it, but big open ice hit. That was with the Islanders right after Pageau came there. Someone was involved in a hit and Pageau went and fought. Truba, yeah. So that hit right there is exactly what I'm talking about. I saw that and was like, oh my goodness, that's why I watch hockey.
That was a great hit. It was driving me nuts listening to the announcers talking about how he should be suspended, and that's the... That was a great hit.
Really, yeah.
Great hit.
That reminded me of the, I want to say it was 06 first round of the playoffs with Brian Campbell hitting RJ Umberger almost in the same spot. It was just
absolutely
punishing. Second play, stretch pass from a defenseman, especially one that to a player kind of at the opposing blue line who was barely able to keep himself on sides and then scores on a breakaway. That's such an exciting play. And we saw Erik Karlsson do it a lot, especially when he was with the Senators. I remember specifically that playoff series against the Bruins a few years ago that the Senators won. Karlsson he was like throwing Hail Marys back from behind his own goal line and connecting with his forwards. Yeah. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And then the power play one-timer from the Ovi spot, either Ovi or Pasternak, just the top of the circle, right in the wheelhouse, and you can't even see the puck leave the stick, and then just either hits the crossbar and goes in the net. Those are my three favorite to see. How about yours?
I think those are great picks.
You can feel free to copy mine, too.
I don't know. One play that I like that you kind of seen, it's kind of like come into prominence the last few weeks, and you've seen it happen kind of a multiple times. And it's only because, hockey, especially on the power play. These guys are all like creative, but it's hard to come up with new stuff to do. So when guys start doing this play on the power play, when they kind of establish body position on the near side post, and get the feed down from the half ball to their forehand, and then flip it between their legs and go kind of go drag the puck between their legs and then go far side. Bob Schaub, I've seen it like two or three times, and that's just kind of mind-boggling skill and creativity, and just see. But it's funny how when one person does it, then other people, it's such a copycat league, and guys are just, there's just so much skill out there. It's insane. And just, so once one guy did it, now you've seen it two or three or four times. So I think that's been cool. Any play, but for me, I always like I always appreciated one. I was just kind of cruising the highlights of the last few games, and if you think of the Ducks overtime winner against Colorado, and they have a big win against the Penguins, then drop a tough one against the Devils, and then to go into Colorado, it was a tough place to play. I always feel like you can't breathe for the first half of the game. That altitude is brutal. But to see the star centerman come back on the back check, I always love when forwards came back on like an unbelievable back check. And to see Getzy come flying back and lift the guy's stick on a breakaway and eliminate the scoring chance and go back the other way, and Raquel scored the winner with a second left. Man, as a defenseman, I always love when the forwards, they didn't always do that with forwards. I was looking for offense, but when they, put the head down and do an unbelievable hard back check like that, and see your star centerman captain come and do that, that was awesome to see. So I always love seeing that as a defenseman. And then, I don't know, a lot of respect for the stretch pass, too. There was another real good one the other night when Zibanejad had the five goals on his OT winner. It looked like just a spin-around slap shot. I think it was Panera, and just rifled one up the middle. And another one, you don't realize how good the pass was till you see a different angle, and he just kind of zipped it between about three sticks right on Zibanejad's tape, who goes in and gets his fifth of the game. So love a good stretch pass, but I also have a lot of respect for the subtle breakaway moves, one of which I could never master. I always tried it in practice and felt like an idiot because I could never do it and just look so dumb. But that stupid move where you come down at full speed and it looks so easy, and you just kind of make that subtle move and then get the goalie moving and then just slide it between his legs.
Oh, yeah.
I always come down, the goalie would just stand there, and I just put it right on his stick that was on the ice. You're like, what were you trying to – what are you doing?
That's the Kucherov, right? Or is that – there's somebody who's been doing that a lot.
That's next level, man. The Kucherov, that's next level. But yeah, just the old school, like you kind of fake the shot, pull it to your back end, need a little speed. Maybe that was my problem, I didn't have enough speed coming in, but you kind of like almost a little leg kick, kind of fake the forehand shot and pull it to your back end and then slide it right between the legs. It's a simple move that I could never get, so respect that you pull that one on.
And talking about that back check player, talking about it, you're mentioning in overtime, watching the Bruins Flyers game that was on tonight on NBC. Check out the Charlie Coyle back check on the 2-on-1 that he had to stop a pretty much a 2-on-0 for the Bruins. I mean, for the Flyers, it was pretty spectacular play. I mean, he did the slide from head first from behind the play and managed to catch up and break up the play. So check that out when you get a chance.
Yeah, I gotta check that out for sure. A slide that worked out.
A slide that worked out, but it was more of like a dive, just an all-out like sellout. Last possible chance, and it worked out perfectly. So, if you get a chance, watch that highlight. Anything else you want to add, or I think we're all good.
I think that's it for me. Yeah, that's great.
All right, sounds good. Well, that'll do it for episode 24 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Deli Tweets or on Instagram as the at Deli Media. And Kent, you can find on Instagram at Husk_VERNA, or you can always find him usually working behind the counter at Huskins Coffee in Santa Ana. So thanks a lot for listening. Thanks, Kent. I hope you have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Anthony. And shout out to the Maple Leafs scouting staff that came into the coffee shop. That was awesome. Appreciate it. They just said they wanted to come in to support. So that was nice of them to stop by when they were in town. So shout out to those guys. Cause it's known to give a brother brain damage, and brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel. Spread yourself.